down to earth in a language that everybody here can easily understand.
Just because it's late doesn't mean we're done yet.
And that's a penalty!
And the quarterback, you kidding me, coach?
There's still plenty more hits to dish out.
Well, he really hit the shit out of that one, didn't he? Look at that, he hit the f***ing ball. That gets a free sting.
This is Late Hits. Late Hits on ESPN 97.5.
And on ESPN 92.5.
Presented by Dr. Ben Salento and Texas Sinus and Snoring. Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Patrick Creighton.
This is the only live and local sports radio show in the city of Houston. When we turn the clock to 7, the only evening sports radio show in H-Town. Late Hits, ESPN 97.5. Patrick Creighton with you, 713-780-3776, 713-780-ESPN. On the H-Town P listener line, on the text line, on Twitter at PCreighton1, and Ray Ball to the side of the glass, the master controls. At Aaron is blitzed at ESPN 97.5. And, of course, on the Twitch stream, twitch.tv/ESPN975. It isn't Ask Us Anything Friday. You know what that means. You know, it was great to see a couple of friends in here ahead of time. I haven't seen in a bit Fred Davis and Henry Thomas. Fred and I go back a long way. When I first started, when I first moved down here, March 2013, we both used to work at 610 and seen Fred have, you know, a lot of success in this business. Henry is a great guy. Not a whole lot of all pros that are great guys just talking to regular people. And look, when you are that successful, most guys have a big ego. They can't be bothered. I understand that. But, man, Henry is as real a dude as you're going to meet. Just regular, for all his success in the NFL, just a regular dude. Great guy. So we'll have some fun tonight as we wrap up the week. And you know what? Last we talked to you was yesterday when we were filling in for what is the beginning of Summer of Palillo, where Charlie was in the Bronx rooting for the enemy. And now we have to pass a new rule that says Charlie has to go to all Yankee Astros games, because when Charlie goes, the Astros win.
Is Palillo really a Yankees fan?
I believe he is.
Ugh.
I believe he's a Yankees fan. Like me, Charlie is from New York, but no self-respecting New Yorker.
We're about to put a moratorium on anybody from New York being here anymore.
No self-respecting New Yorker roots for the Yankees. The bandwagoners, the sheep.
The way it was described to me by a girl who grew up in Brooklyn was the white collar rooted for the Yankees and the Giants. The blue collar rooted for the Mets and the Jets.
Yeah, that's not necessarily accurate. Back in the day, the Giants, you know, played in the Polo Grounds before moving to Yankee Stadium. So the Giants and the Yankees played in the same building for decades. The Mets and the Jets played in the same building for decades. So when the Jets came into the NFL, Mets, Jets, Giants, Yankees were because both of those teams played in the same building. Eventually, the Giants kind of got kicked out of Yankee Stadium. They wanted their own building, and the governor of New York at the time basically gave them the double rods and said, you want a building? Frickin' buy it. And the Giants then played a couple of years in the Yale Bowl, which, if you want to imagine the most decrepit-looking coliseum that you could think of that was built in the last 150 years, that's what the Yale Bowl was before they eventually they got a sweetheart deal from New Jersey to go move into the swamp. And then the Jets would eventually follow them into the swamp. And that's why the NFL schedule says Jersey A and Jersey B, because there are no technical New York City teams. But, you know, self-respecting fans don't root for the Yankees. That's heresy. And if you're from Brooklyn and you root for the Yankees, you're literally a traitor to your own family. I understand that Ebbets Field is now basically a housing project. There's still a part of the wall that's still there, but Ebbets Field became a housing project. But if you are from Brooklyn, and, you know, my family being from Brooklyn, my grandmother, I grew up in my grandparents' house. My grandmother was a huge Dodgers fan. And when the Dodgers left Brooklyn, the Dodger fandom in her kind of died with it. You know, like once they moved out to L.A., they stopped rooting for the Dodgers, but they weren't going to root for the Giants, who also moved, out of New York out to San Francisco, and they sure as hell weren't going to become Yankees fans. So they basically waited the 5 years for the Mets to come. Yeah, if you're from Brooklyn, you're not a Met fan, you're probably a traitor to your own family. And you know what happens to actual traitors. Well, the Astros, of course, got some measure of revenge yesterday afternoon when Jose Altuve did what he does best, which is hit late-inning home runs against the Yankees on a fastball that was probably about eye level. Now, Chad Green is a good reliever. That is the first home run Chad Green has given up in his career on any fastball he's ever thrown above the zone. That's like one of his bread and butters, is he throws that high fastball. That is a bread and butter pitch for Chad Green, and Altuve took him yard. And it's classic Altuve high pitch swing, right? When Altuve is going good, he throws that high fastball. Altuve has a great high pitch swing. It's almost like he pops on his tippy toes and suddenly elevates himself 2 inches higher. But Altuve is a terrific high fastball hitter. Probably because when you short, you see a lot of high fastballs. And growing up, he probably saw a lot of high fastballs. And I would venture to say that as a fellow short person, when you grow up playing baseball, if you're short, fastballs at your face tend to be called strikes. So either learn to hit them or expect to get called out on strikes a lot. Jose probably learned to hit it because he hits it better than anyone in the league. So the Astros get to come home after getting one of the three in the Bronx. They split a six-game road trip that ran through Tampa and New York. And now they come home for a 10-game homestand. The first three tonight against the Toronto Traveling Wilburys, who, as of June 1st, will be playing in Buffalo. They've been playing at their spring training complex in Dunedin, Florida. So the Road Warriors, the Traveling Wilburys, they're in town for three, followed by three with the Halos, and then four with the Arlington Junkrabbers.
I'm going to make the argument. Sorry, I'm going to take you off topic for a second.
MLB, it's Friday. I think we're good with
MLB
that.
MLB marketing severely, severely screwed up by not having at least one game, maybe per month, maybe one series per month, to go to a smaller market where a minor league team is for their home games that they're not playing in Toronto, obviously, and letting those fans go in and go, hey, you want to see big boys? We're going to jack up the prices because there's only 2,000 seats, but come on in. The very small, like, I'm not saying, you know, a single A, but a triple A market, you go in there, you put the Blue Jays against whoever the closest major team is when that was supposed to be their homestand. I think that would have been made a lot of money, and it would have been good publicity points for MLB.
It would have been really cool for everybody basically except the Blue Jays.
Well, yeah.
Because when you're moving around that many cities, you're literally living on the road. And, I mean, they kind of are as it is. But you're living on the road, and you don't necessarily have cost certainty building to building. So your bottom line for how much money you're bringing in is really hard to calculate. They're already taking a beating on money this year because they can't play in their own building. And
let their commie government bail them out.
At some point in time, baseball is going to lift all the restrictions, I think, by the All-Star break. When we come back from the All-Star break, I would be really surprised if we don't have full stadiums coming back from the break. I know it's not exactly the midway point. It's the unofficial midway point of the season. But I think once we come back from the All-Star break, we're going to be able to have 40,000 at Minute Maid Park and in every other park as well. And for the Blue Jays, they're the only non-American team, thanks to the strike killing the Expos, they're the only non-American team. And not being able to play in their own building and not being able to get that money from their fans, from parking, from concessions and merchandising, they are getting destroyed this year when it comes to, you know, their revenues. And, you know, the Blue Jays don't have, they're not one of those $50 million teams. They have a respectable payroll. It's not great, but considering, you know, Canadian dollar to American dollar, and they've got a lot of young players. So they were kind of at a rebuild. They're on the way up from a rebuild. So they got a lot of young players who are still very cheap. But that's part of the reason why they were able to give George Springer the sixth year to get to $150 million is because they don't have a lot of guys that they have to pay. The Jays' payroll this year is $142 million. That's decent. That's top half of the league for what is essentially a smaller mid-market because you've got the dollar difference. Their payroll is more than the White Sox. It's more than the Twins. It's more than the Reds, the Rockies, the Brewers, the Junk Grabbers. And it's like $1.5 million lower than the Braves. So that's a respectable payroll. They're getting murdered on their lack of revenue this year. And I hope it doesn't ultimately cause them to dump out salary later on this year or next year. I don't want to see teams try not to compete, especially when you've got a lot of good young talent. And they've got terrific young talent, one of whom just went yard. But Astros, they get 3-3. Now they got 10 at home. And we'll get you some info as we keep an eye on this this game tonight. Some interesting info for the game tonight. We'll get it to you next.
Wheel. Fun. Sports. ESPN 97.5. You are listening to Late Hits on ESPN 97.5.
And on ESPN 92.5.
Presented by Dr. Ben Salento and Texas Sinus and Snoring. Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios. Here's Patrick Creighton.
So Bo Bichette goes yard, top of the first. It's 1-0. Jays bottom one. Unk at the plate. I said, we'll keep an eye on that. You know, something that I hate this, and that is that George Springer isn't playing. If you follow me on Twitter or you follow a handful of the locals on Twitter, you saw all the different video clips of Springer before the game, reuniting with all his former teammates and having fun. And everybody's getting hugs and high fives. And Alex Bregman put ice cubes down his back while he was sitting down doing an interview. You see how much Springer is liked and respected by the Astros players. And he's a guy who was always considered to be the heart and soul of the team. I think it absolutely hurt everybody when Springer didn't come back. Now, they probably knew he wasn't coming back. I'm sure he told some of the guys he wasn't coming back. But George not being back, and in hindsight, it clearly looks like it was a financially motivated thing with the Astros. They were watching the bottom line, and that was the biggest reason why he wasn't going to come back. And again, if he does come back, well, Uncle Mike's definitely not here. And Jake Odorizzi is not here. Anybody, Pedro Baez isn't here. That would have been their only move. They would have had to find ways to get rid of people. You know, Jason Castro is probably not here because they are adamant about finding a way to stay under the tax. You know, we talked to Bob Nightingale from USA Today yesterday when we were in for Charlie about, you know, do you think, you know, asking him, did he think the Astros at the deadline would go for it or would they stick to their guns about we're not paying the tax come hell or high water? And he thinks that they would go for it. Honestly, if you had asked me this question last year, I would have said they would have gone for it. The Astros deliberately did nothing at the deadline last year because they were right up against the tax line then too. And when they didn't make a move, they went into a little bit of a tailspin. They tried to recover at the end of the year, but the reason they were under 500 right after the trade deadline, they go into a 12-game tailspin. There was no reinforcements coming. If you remember in 2017, when the Astros didn't pull the big move at the regular trade deadline, the non-waiver trade deadline, the reaction from some of the players, the disappointment, Dallas Keuchel was outspoken about it, the disappointment that they were not able to make a deal. And then you saw just the absolute jubilation when at 11:59:59 on August 31st, they were able to pull the deal for Justin Verlander. And it springs them into a World Series championship. But not seeing George in the game tonight, like I like George. I don't know anybody who doesn't like George that knows him. I don't want to see him hurt. I wanted to see him play. I want to see him play well. I mean, I don't want them to win. I obviously want the Astros to win. But the Astros can win and George Springer play well. Well, George is back on the injured list, and they do not think he is going to be ready to go when he would be eligible to come off the injured list May 13th. He apparently aggravated the strained right quad muscle that he's had, and they don't think it's going to be something that's going to be cleared up in 2 weeks. And think about it. He didn't make his debut until April 28th between a strained oblique and then the quad injury. And 5 days later, he's out of the lineup because he re-aggravated the quad. So very frustrating for George to not be able to play. But like I said, you should see how absolutely beloved he is by the entire team. Not just the team, the coaching staff. Dusty's giving him hugs. Everybody's giving George hugs. And he looked genuinely excited to see everyone. Now, there was a story up on ESPN.com. And it's from Brad Doolittle. And what he did was he did a good thing and a bad thing for each team. And he put them in order of his power rankings. Now, for those of you wondering where the Astros are in his power rankings, they're third behind the Dodgers and the Yankees. Now, I think the Yankees are way too high, but he has the Astros as the third strongest team in all of baseball. And he lists good thing, the team's ability to withstand pitching injuries. Odorizzi's down, Paredes is down, Baez is down, there's a handful of other guys who haven't even gotten up yet because they've been hurt since spring training. Guys who had off-season surgery, right? Andre Scrub just came back. Christian Javier has pitched like an ace. He lists that as the good thing. And, like, so far, I think look, obviously the Yankees series, two out of three times, started and make it out of the fifth. Yankees are one of the elite teams in offenses in baseball. Then he lists as the not-so-good thing, and he goes right to Jose Altuve. Well, last year, Altuve had a career-worst OPS, and this year he's gotten off to a slow start. And, you know, once upon a time, people thought Altuve was going to get 3,000 hits. Now they just need him to be a league-average second baseman. And I feel like there is an agenda here. And it's not just this particular rider. I feel like this is nationally, every market. People want Jose Altuve to fail. Fair or unfair, Altuve seems to be considered the face of the Astros cheating scandal. Even though in the course of the investigation, we learned Altuve didn't participate in it because he didn't like it. I can figure it out better than you guys can tell it to me, so just let me do my own thing. Still, he has become the face of the Astros cheating scandal and something that is highly perpetuated out of New York. And what a surprise, out of New York, big East Coast bias. Altuve has become the poster boy for the Astros and the cheating. And everywhere, it's always, every time I talk about the Astros cheating scandal, who's the first guy who gets mentioned? Jose Altuve. Who took the absolute worst of the profanity-laced catcalls in New York? Jose Altuve by a country mile. I mean, for nine innings, for three straight games, they chanted F Altuve. Other guys didn't get that. Kyle Tucker did get "We Don't Know You." That's actually kind of funny. But Altuve takes the brunt of everything. And it really seems like people want Altuve to fail. They want to have somebody that they can say, look, this guy was great, but then when they stopped cheating, look what happened. And the funny thing about it is this. If you go back to the 2017 season and try to figure out who had like the biggest increase in production, who had the career year, it wasn't Jose Altuve. Now, did he have a career year? Yes, but was it a lot bigger than what he did the year before? No. It was less than 5% different. He actually had fewer hits and fewer RBI. He hit .008 better. Not extremely negligible difference. The guy who had the big difference was Marwin Gonzalez. His numbers exploded. Nobody seems to care about that because, well, he went on to play in Minnesota. Get some more fun stuff with the Astros here. Coming up next, Slate Hits.
Stay up to date with the latest innovations hitting the city of Houston by visiting innovationmap.com or follow them on any of your social media platforms. Just search Innovation Map. This is Late Hits on ESPN 97.5.
And on ESPN 92.5.
Presented by Dr. Ben Salento and Texas Sinus and Snoring. Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Patrick Creighton.
So apparently this is a thing that goes on at this radio station. I can't get into the colorful metaphors that I use on the Twitch channel because the FCC frowns on that in this establishment. But apparently earlier today, there was a discussion on one of the other shows, which I got to believe was Nick and Dell because just throwing a bone there. I'm gonna believe it's Nick and Del about whether or not you should, you know, do you pull out the chair, open the door for your wife, girlfriend, significant other, whatnot. If you don't open the door for your wife, girlfriend, significant other, whomever, you are a colossal POS. If you do not pull out the chair for them to sit down, you're a POS. If you don't take her coat from her and either hang it up or put it on the chair or whatever you're doing, if you don't do that for her, you're a POS. There are certain things a gentleman does. If you can't be a gentleman, you don't deserve any sex. In fact, you should probably order the most expensive stuff on the menu, ask to go to the bathroom, and leave your ass there permanently. Be a gentleman. It's not that hard. How long does it take you to walk to the other side of the car and open the door for her? How hard was that? Did it take like 5 extra steps? You're probably 3,000 steps shy of your 10,000 anyway. So take the damn steps. If you can't bring your woman flowers every now and then. I'm not even saying every day. Every now and then. Let's say once every other week. It's not a lot. You can go pick up a bouquet of flowers in Kroger for $10. If that. Sometimes they're not even that much. She doesn't care how much they cost. She cares that you bought them and put them in a vase of water on the table. That's what she cares about. If you can't make those small efforts, you don't deserve any love and affection or anything. Because you're a POS. Open the damn door.
I will say, let's go back to the car door thing real quick. There is one logical excuse other than, you know, broken arm or something like that. During the hottest part of summer, if you are out somewhere and your car has been sitting and baking in the heat, yes, it's a nice thing to open the car door, but my wife and I have an understanding. I know how impatient she is. My job is to get in that damn car and get the AC cranked immediately because she does not want to step into or sit down in a car that's 128 degrees inside because it's been sitting and baking in the Texas sun. Now, that's only during the summer, and that's very rare occasions when we are out somewhere where we're parked directly in the sun.
Okay, because coming from New York,
That didn't happen.
No, you didn't burn your butt on the seat the way you do now. If your car does not have remote start where you can get your AC cranked and running from wherever you are, and not every car has remote start, and that's okay. Have a small blanket in the car. Don't have to be a heavy blanket, a small throw blanket that you can put on the bottom of the seat so that when she sits down in her really nice dress or skirt or something, she don't burn her butt.
It's not even that. It's you are stepping into a literal sauna and your sweat just starts pouring. So if you're out somewhere and she's done her makeup and everything, sweat is just going to start pouring.
No, you got to have the car running ahead of time. You got to have the car running ahead of time. But just the idea of it was one of the first things that, you know, that we learned when we came down here was that when your car sits in the sun, if it's 100 degrees out, it's 130 in the car. And hot leather, black leather at 130 degrees is not comfortable to sit on.
Trying to be fancy.
You know, I like my creature comforts. I do. I like my creature comforts.
The only reason you can convince me to get leather seats in a vehicle when I live in Texas is if it's the one that has the AC vents inside the seat that blow up and cool your junk for you.
I used to have one of those.
If it doesn't have that, then no, you're not selling me on a leather-seated vehicle. Get the hell out of here.
But no, I've always wanted leather seats, and the reason being is this. I have children. You know what children do in a car? They spill stuff. Leather wipes off and it's easy to clean. Fabric stains like a mother. So since I know I can't tell them, no, you can't have anything in the car.
Oh, yes, you could have.
And I have a dog, which, you know, the dog is going to drool and roll all over and have her hair everywhere. And it's a lot easier to vacuum the back of the car when it's leather than it is to try to get the hair off the material seats. Those are really hard to clean. Is that a home run off the train tracks?
Carlos Correa hits a 2-run bomb to give the Astros the lead in the bottom of the second.
Captain Crush!
That didn't look like it was going to stay fair. I don't know how the hell it did.
And that was... It's like right down the left field line. But it's like on the train tracks. It's way up. That ball, there's a lot of home runs to left field where the only park they're going to go out of is Minute Maid. This one's going out anywhere.
Well, I need to see a replay because it looked like where that ball struck bat, it was 4 inches off the grip. Like, he didn't barrel that thing.
No, he had it closer to the trademark, huh?
Yeah. So I don't know how he did that with that kind of power to send it flying like. That's why I thought immediately it was just going to squeak over the left field wall, go foul. But
the Jays pitcher Ross Stripling just standing there like, how the hell did that stay fair? He was beside himself. Captain Crush makes it 2-1. By the way, everyone who was concerned about what Carlos Correa was going to do, he's not off to a great start. 261 is not a great start, but he just went through an 0-for stretch. Well, makes it up with a two-run homer. At the end of the year, he'll probably wind up hitting somewhere between 280 and 300. And he'll probably have somewhere between 25 and 33 homers. And considering it's a contract year, do not be surprised if he plays 146 games. It's amazing how guys find ways to get through games when money is on the line. And there's about $250 million on the line for Carlos Correa. What we saw in the Bronx, and I asked Bob Nightingale about this yesterday, that's going to play a decision in whether a guy like Carlos Correa wants to stay in Houston. Because if the Astros are trying to beat him over the head for a team-friendly deal, they want him to take a discount, but he's going to get just mercilessly booed and called every name in the book every time they go somewhere else, 100 times worse than any other team. And he's going to see how guys who were on that 2017 team get treated once they go to another uniform. Why does he want to stay here and take a discount when he can go on the market, get max dollars, and not be called a bleeping cheater? Because that's what happens. Once you're out of the uniform, you don't have to deal with that anymore. And this is why I think the Astros messed up, not just this offseason, the offseason before when they should have signed him. And, you know, going and getting, Javi Baez out of Chicago, he's not as good. Dude never walks. You know, there's the other shortstops, the guys who are actually going to be available because there's going to be extensions as the season goes on. I don't think the guys who are actually going to hit the market are going to be better. You might wind up getting a better player to come in and play third base on a short-term deal and move Bregman to short than you would getting somebody who's a viable shortstop to come in. You do not want to go, oh yeah, I just saw the replay, and he hits this, like, it's not even on the black part of the bat. He's got a two-tone bat. This is, like, more towards the handle, and he still blasts this thing just inside the pole. Chicken is fair.
Chicken is foul, technically, according to the poll.
that's impressive power, hitting that thing literally off the handle of the bat.
Now you see what I'm saying. How in the hell did that happen?
Well, it's like when you see a guy, you know, behind the ball, just throws the bat out there, and somehow it goes over the wall the other way down the line. You know, the home run that got hit against the Astros in the World Series was not a great swing, and the ball just kept carrying the other way down the line. I don't want to create some kind of false hope about this, because that wouldn't be normal. But there's absolutely nothing normal about the player we're going to talk about next.
This is Heisman Trophy winner, College Hall of Fame, Billy Sims, and you're listening to ESPN 97.5.
You're listening to Late Hits on ESPN 97.5.
And on ESPN 92.5.
Presented by Dr. Ben Salento and Texas Sinus and Snoring. Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Patrick Creighton.
Hey, let me take a minute and tell you about my good friend Dr. Ben Salento, Texas Sinus and Snoring. You know, I spent over 20 years dealing with crazy sinus problems. I had a sinus infection every 2 to 3 months. Couldn't breathe well. It led to terrible snoring issues and ultimately to sleep apnea. And every time I'd get a sinus infection, I'd just call a doctor and they'd give me a Z-Pack and I'd be on my way. And, you know, 8 weeks later, I'm right back to asking for another Z-Pack. And you're just living on antibiotics all the time. It never actually fixed the real problem. Met Dr. Ben a little over a year and a half ago, and he's got a state-of-the-art facility up in North Houston. Went to go see him, had a consultation, talked to him about what was going on. You know, what my issues were. Went right down the hallway. They did a CT scan, had the results up on the board in 5 minutes. Put a plan of action together, and I wound up having a procedure where they removed staph infection from my sinuses, which is why I was living on antibiotics. I had a balloon sinuplasty to fix all the damaged tissues in my sinuses from the staph infection. And I had a septoplasty to fix a deviated septum that I didn't even know that I had. Since I had the procedure, I haven't had any sinus infections, haven't had a sinus headache. My airways are clear, so I don't snore. Now that I don't snore, I don't have sleep apnea. I am so much healthier and sleeping so much better because of Dr. Ben. If you have any of these issues, whether it's your sinuses, your snoring, your sleep apnea, you want to get off that CPAP machine, maybe you can't sleep with it and you're kind of risking it with sleep apnea and not treating it, you need to make a consultation with Dr. Ben Salento. So take down this number. Write it down. Open up the notepad in your phone. Punch it in there. 346-413-9313. 346-413-9313. Or go to TexasSinusAndSnoring.com. Schedule your consultation with Dr. Ben. Talk to him about what's going on. Let him help you the way that he's helped me. It will change your life. You will breathe better. You will sleep better. You will feel better. Call Dr. Ben, 346-413-9313. Tell him I sent you by. In fact, just talked to a buddy of mine, Gerald Sanchez, who is a guy who I did the Skeeters games with last year. He does work with UH. Great guy. For instance, I've been down here 8 years. I've known him almost the whole 8 years. Terrific guy. He's going to see Dr. Ben. Dr. Dre on 290 has gone to see Dr. Ben. Crystal's gone to see Dr. Ben. Security guard who worked at Texas Card House, he went to see Dr. Ben. So many people who listen to the show have gone to see Dr. Ben, and every single one of them is glad they did. So stop waiting. Go see him. Astros up 2-1, and we are in the bottom of the second. And I believe, I don't have my glasses on, but if I am looking at things correctly here. We yes. have ducks on the pond. And Alex Bregman at the plate. Machete, Altuve, and Unk. Bases a drunk full of Astros. Chance to blow this puppy open right here in the second. You know, I don't want to create false hope or make people think that this is something that's likely to happen, because in reality, this should never have any chance of happening. But we're not talking about a normal human being. We're basically talking about a guy who has been absolutely blessed with incredible genetics, and that's Justin Verlander. Verlander is way ahead of where he should be right now, recovering from Tommy John. In fact, he's already throwing from 90 feet. He shouldn't be at that spot yet. And he is just such a baseball junkie and dedicated to what he does. He is out there pushing himself harder and harder every time, every day as he picks up another ball to get better and get back from Tommy John surgery. He said that it bothers him that for this, you know, 2-year extension that he signed for $66 million, he's made one start. He made one start, pitched six innings, looked great, went on the IL, and never pitched again. Had Tommy John surgery, is expected to miss all of this year. But could you imagine, just because he's Justin Verlander and he's been just given a golden right arm, that when we get to September, somehow he's actually able to throw? I would still put it at 5%. And unless they're really looking for a World Series, probably wouldn't let him throw anyway. But for a team that is, for using a football term, capped out, as they just don't want to spend any more money because they're so close to the tax, if they were able to get Verlander back end of September, you know, right in time for the playoffs in October, I don't know how well Verlander could pitch, and I don't know that he could pitch in the starting rotation. He might have to pitch out of the pen. His presence alone would probably make the entire team play 15% better. Bregman works out a walk and a run comes home. It's 3-1 Astros. Two out, bottom second, and Yordan Alvarez coming to the plate. By the way, Yordan's been hitting a lot of home runs lately. So this will be a very interesting at bat. Just the idea of Verlander's throwing from 90 feet is, I mean, that's ridiculous. For right now, that's ridiculous. The guy is just a total freak of nature. And that's why, even though I'm saying I don't think it'll happen, I'm not going to bet on it happening. I'm going to say very, very low chance that it happens. If anybody could pull it off, Verlander keeps himself in great shape, and he just has a magic right arm. He's definitely the guy who could do it. He's definitely not ready to quit. He's going to pitch next year. And he addressed the idea of, you know, have there been any talks with the Astros? And he said no, and there shouldn't be. I'm nowhere near ready to say I'm ready to pitch. And until, you know, he says, okay, I'm ready to pitch, I'm healthy, I can start playing, that's when you would talk about it. There's no reason to talk about it before then. And he understands that. As one of the few guys who have had a long-term contract in baseball that panned out, you know, when he signed a 7-year, $180 million contract and actually performed through it and got an extension. There haven't been a whole lot of those. Derek Jeter had a 10-year contract, panned out. He was terrific. I think he had 300 every single year except the last one. He hit like 273. Clayton Kershaw, 7-year deal. He pitched great. Alex Rodriguez's first contract, the 10-year 252, where he opted out after the seventh year, he won multiple MVPs. I mean, he earned his money. Max Scherzer's contract, 7 years and 210. Max Scherzer has been worth every penny. That's pretty much where the line is drawn, though. And unfortunately for Albert Pujols, his contract is not going to go down as one that was worth it. Albert's 10-year deal, well, he's not going to finish it as a member of the Angels. Albert Pujols was designated for assignment, which is just mind-boggling to think, hey, this is Albert Pujols. But in a decision that came from their front office, not from their manager, they decided to DFA Albert Pujols. It will end his tenure with the team 2 months into the final year of his 10-year, $240 million contract. Now, as great a player as Pujols is and was, he probably has a 10-year run that is unmatched by anybody in the last 60 years. I mean, you probably got to go back to the 50s to find a guy who put up the kind of numbers Albert Pujols put up for a decade with the Cardinals. But since he went to the Angels, he had 1 year like that. They paid a lot of money for a guy who declined very rapidly. And it's unfortunate. But, you know, father time comes for everybody. Even the greatest players to ever grace the field, eventually the end of the line comes. I don't know how many of you were watching baseball in 1973 when Willie Mays, the greatest living ball player right now, was falling all over himself in the outfield with the Mets at the very end of his career. We've seen Albert basically take 7 seconds to get to first base. Unfortunately, it happens to everybody. But he is a first ballot Hall of Famer all the way. And if this is the end, what an incredible career. Slate Hits.
My name is Bob Lee, and you're listening to ESPN 97.5.